This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Joy Powers. The recent protests and demonstrations for racial justice and police accountability are undoubtedly some of the defining moments of this era. For some, this summer was a breaking point. But for others, like Khalil Coleman, it was the next step of a movement that's been building for years. Coleman is a local community activist and protest organizer, whose work has been crucial to the demonstrations here in Milwaukee. He was profiled in an article for this month's Milwaukee Magazine, alongside fellow protest leaders Frank Nitti and Vaughn Mays. Khalil Coleman joins me to talk about his work, this movement, and the future of these demonstrations. Khalil, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you for the invite.
So much has happened over this summer and even these last few weeks, so I feel like it's pretty important to ask this. How are you doing right now? How are you feeling?
I'm doing great, actually. Obviously, some ups and downs and things, you know, in terms of, you know, justice and whatnot. But as far as, you know, my mental, you know, my physical, my spiritual level, I am blessed. I'm doing great.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. I know, especially the last month or so has been really emotionally taxing for a lot of people.
Yes.
Much of this movement has recently shifted to Kenosha, Wisconsin. How have you been involved in the protests there?
You know, we started off our first 3 days out there in Kenosha, you know, very intense environment, of course. You know, a lot of things happening. I believe it was our second or third day during the day of the shooting that occurred. And, you know, we was listening to the radars, the scanners and things of that nature. And, you know, just, you know, having a little intel with some of the groups that was interning to Kenosha. And, you know, we just started getting updates of, like, these white supremacist groups were coming in to attack peaceful protesters. You know, they was coming looking to harm individuals and things of that nature. You know, we've been protesting across Wisconsin over the past 100 days. You know, and I remember just kind of being down there and, you know, we ended up parking, you know, at a particular intersection and, you know, probably not even within 2-3 hours of us being there, we got calls that our tires were slashed, that the police was looking to push protesters to a particular designated area, and they were going to step back and allow these white supremacist groups to, you know, something to the nature of like do what they do. So, you know, we was hearing all of this information, pretty much people calling us, telling us be careful down there, you know, you guys are being targeted, et cetera, et cetera. And when the shooting occurred, it actually occurred maybe about like 3 or 4 blocks from where we were from. So all of this stuff was going on at the same time of all of our tires being slashed, or at least over 13 vehicles, I believe, experienced tire slash. So not all of them per se, but so we were stuck in the middle of Kenosha with the city being on lockdown, gas stations being closed, no tolls coming into the city to help anybody out. People were forced to drive their cars on flats out of Kenosha to a more safer county. So it's been extremely intense, you know, and knowing one of the individuals who was shot was a medic since day one of the protest in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. You know, this is a guy who has put himself on the line multiple times when police were shooting people with rubber bullets, throwing tear gas during a time when real gunfire and things were being exchanged. These were individuals who were putting their selves on the line, running in the middle of chaos, and pulling people to rescue, and to find out that, you know, this was one of the individuals who was a victim in this shooting. It was very emotional for people. So it's been crazy these last 100 days, to say the least.
Yeah, of course. Now, you've been involved with a lot of the behind-the-scenes work, making these demonstrations happen, making things flow more smoothly. What has that experience been like, especially since there's been so much that has happened, as you mentioned, over the last 100 days or so?
It's been humbling, you know, just to, you know, walk alongside with some of these individuals, you know, just phenomenal people, you know, educators, social workers, artists, you know, corporate people in high places and, you know, on the front line and behind the scenes who just support the work that the people in the revolution have been participating in and been able to make happen. It's just been a humbling experience. You know, for so many great people to come together into a line with a vision. And of course, you know, since day one and, you know, looking at 103 days, of course, the numbers aren't as strong. But I think the support from the community, you know, whether we go in Milwaukee, whether we go in Tulsa, it's still really heavy. You know, people want to see these demonstrations happen. People want to see law changes. People want to see a change in community culture, you know, where black and white and black and brown and white people can coexist, you know, in a community and not be treated unjust. So, you know, it has been a lot of work and a lot of people have really stepped up and have helped this revolution grow and progress over the 100 days.
Yeah, of course, you know, you're mentioning this is a movement that has not only been here in Milwaukee and also in Kenosha, but also in Wauwatosa. And a number of the members of your group actually went to D.C. What was that like? I know that you were back here in Milwaukee for this, but what was that experience like setting that up?
Yeah, you know, we have one of our core organizers, you know, Mariah Smith, pretty much leading the D.C. trip. You know, we were able to get sponsors. I believe about 30 so people, you know, went on the trip or so. And for a lot of them, it was their first time, you know, going to D.C., you know, being able to go to the White House, you know, especially with so much political tension going on right now with you know, evolving around presidency and just a lot of social issues right now. You know, it was a great experience to be able to have people stay back and keep the revolution alive and thriving for these 100 and something days and have people out there in D.C. keeping the message alive, bring it to the forefront, issues of Wisconsin, issues of Milwaukee. So it was just great to see the duo, you know, still continue to, you know, take these concerns and their experiences and expand them and have our people come back from D.C., you know, with more fire, more insight, and just a better understanding of how this thing connects on a national level. I think that was probably the most important part of the D.C. trip.
Yeah, to give it some of that national view. You know, as you've said, this is a movement that has led to some real change. When you look at the last months, what are the things that you're most proud of that you've been able to accomplish through this movement?
You know, on our 100th day, we finally released our demands. I think that was a really, really big accomplishment for us, you know, to be able to go through our first, you know, 99 days of experience, you know, really seeing what the issue were, really listening to the people in terms of their ability to be able to articulate what it is that needed to be done in the system, you know, and being able to have that pressure and that demand in the street while we're protesting, you know, shutting things down, making that impact, you know, to be able to supply these demands with that. You know, we also been able to get Joseph Mensah suspended, the police officer out in Wauwatosa who killed 3 individuals within the 5-year span. We was able to get the officer who killed Mattioli, who killed Joel Acevedo. You know, charges are pending against him in the strangulation of Joel. We were able to fire the chief from Milwaukee Police Department with the support of the Fire and Police Commission, just with their lack of transparency and urgency in regarding a lot of these matters, you know, and just a lack of leadership in regards to MPD, you know, so that was a big thing. You know, places like Cudahy, you know, introduce legislation such as racism is a public health crisis. You know, that was introduced out there in Cudahy. Legislation was introduced into the Common Council of Milwaukee, the I Can't Breathe legislation by Malele Cox. Not really sure where that's at in the legislation, but these are the type of things that are occurring because of the protests. You know, in Wauwatosa, we was able to ban no knock warrants and no chokeholds by any law enforcement within the district of Wauwatosa. You know, we established an ad hoc committee in Wauwatosa that pretty much takes these recommendations directly to the Common Council for voting purposes and decision making. So all of this has occurred within the first 100 days of protests. And there's been some great challenges, but some great success to go along with them.
Now, of course, the movement isn't over by any stretch of the imagination. I've heard that some people want to go for at least 200 days. What do you see as kind of the end of this movement? And I guess the other question is, do you see an end?
You know, I've been in a lot of protests throughout the years out here in Milwaukee. You know, I think my first jump was like the murder of Darius Simmons, who was killed in front of his house after John Spooner, the murderer of Darius Simmons, the 13-year-old boy. John Spooner spoke with Bob Donovan, former alderman, and pretty much Bob Donovan, I remember how the investigation went. Bob Donovan told him to do what he had to do. And John Spooner ended up going home after meeting with him, and he killed the 13-year-old boy in front of his parents. And that's really what sparked me and leading a lot of the protests out here in Milwaukee. And then it led to Derrick Williams, who was murdered. They broke his neck bone and threw him in the backseat of a police car, and he suffocated. And I remember marching in the streets for a whole year for Derrick Williams. And then we ended up connecting with Michael Bell, and, you know, we passed the bail law with the outside investigation with police officers. And then I remember Dontre Hamilton died, and for 4 months the family cried in the park with no answer from the mayor, from the chief. And then we ended up leading the Dontre Hamilton rallies, and, you know, now here we are. And I remember taking a break after that and then kind of seeing all of the other stuff transpiring around the country, you know, hearing about George Floyd just recently, and it just opened up a lot of wounds. And, you know, to kind of answer your question about like this, and I think all of it kind of builds up one addition on top of the other. The evolution of each one of these things occurring, you know, is what continues to build on what the next phase look like. So, you know, whether we're done, and I don't think that 200 days is like our goal of like being done, you know, that kind of came out of us marching on a regular, and then, you know, us learning a little history about the Milwaukee housing marches and learning that they marched for 200 days. And then it became a thing like, okay, you know, for revolution, like, you know, we can do this. And a lot of people just kind of like want to see us, you know, make that history. But I don't think that's the goal of the end of the protest. I think people really want to see laws change. People really want to see police be held accountable, you know, when they break the law, when they break policies and procedures, to not allow them to be on paid relief, right? You know, to allow police officers to go through due process. Like if I kill, I'm going to court. You know what I'm saying? I got to face my jury. Police officers should do the same thing. You know, when they murder, it shouldn't be exempt investigations. You know, and I think that's what people want to see. People want to see police officers be judged by a jury or their peers, just like every other person would too.
Yeah. So as you look to the future, what are your biggest priorities in at least the immediate future? What do you want to see happen?
You know, in the immediate future, you know, we want to see, of course, Joseph Vincent fired. You know, he shouldn't be a police officer. You know, I mean, you know, we feel there's like some real issues for one cop to kill three people within a 5-year span, right? And if he follows every policy, then that's a problem too. Because if I kill three people within 5 years and this is a policy for policing for me to do, I think all of these things are questionable right now, right? Is it the individual or is it the system that needs to be held accountable? And in some cases, it's both. right? Because we have individuals who are acting as judge, jury, and executioners because they can, because the system allows them to. That's what I want to see. Like me personally, you know, I want to see police officers go to jail, you know, when they break the law, you know, just like my brothers and my sisters would in my community. I want to see me and my children and my brothers and sisters in my community live where police officers are accountable to the community that they serve, you know, and when police officers break laws and policies and procedures, that they're held accountable in the community that they serve. That's what I want to see happen.
All right. Well, Khalil, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect and sharing your work.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Khalil Coleman is a local community activist and protest organizer. Coleman was profiled in an article in this month's Milwaukee Magazine alongside activists Frank Nitti and Vaughn Mays.